Hello everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Digital Drift. Ekwemi is back on the show. Hi Ekwemi.
Hi Francis, it's good to be here again.
Yeah, we missed you in the last episode though.
Everyone
was asking where's Ekwemi. This episode we're bringing one of the startups that is really making an impact in many ways when it comes to the transport sector in Nigeria and around Africa. They've been solving the problem of moving people from one location to the other. They've been also helping a place like Lagos that, you know, it's very crazy getting around Lagos because of the traffic. And, you know, and I'm sure you might be thinking one or two startups already, but today we have Anyedi Udo Ubong, right? Anyedi, hi, welcome.
Yes. Yeah, hi, Anyedi Udo Ubong. Those are all. Anyedi Udo Ubong.
So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
I mean, Anyedi has been around in the Nigerian tech space. Right now, he's the guy really moving AfroCab forward. At least before the show, he let me know that AfroCab doesn't exist again. It's now Afro, right?
Yeah, something like that. So officially with Afro, the product is Afro. That's the brand we're pushing.
Sorry, what's the product? It's Afro. No longer a car. Is that what you're saying?
So we're trying to say it's no longer going to be limited to cars. We could be doing rockets, drones, we could bring people to Mars, hopefully.
Okay. So Afro, that seems a bit, you know, kind of, how do you take that word and trademark it?
I think we don't have to trademark it, you know, so it's there'll be a bit of a bandwagon effect. It kind of, it sticks with some things people think of. People think of it as a hairdo. People think of it as being, related to African or black or strong. So it's kind of like whatever you feel it means to you, why not? We'll just give you an experience and then you can associate with something that is complementarily also positive to you. We hope.
Okay, thanks. Just to be clear, the taxi booking service is still operational, it's still running.
Yes, it's still operational. Like I just mentioned to Francis before we got on this recording, in very many ways, when we started, we came out as AfroCab, and similarly to like one of the pacesetters of this industry, who was called AfroCab before they were, you know, rebranded and we called themselves Uber, we found it necessary to really let people know that we're not just a cab service. So AfroCab was the original product. It actually is the name of the Nigerian subsidiary of the company. But as a company, we're known as Afro Technologies. And as we're pushing our ride-hailing service, e-hailing service, ride-sharing service, delivery service, we'll just basically call it Afro, another car. Because tomorrow we could be pushing containers on trucks. We could be delivering goods for any of the local e-commerce giants. And in that sense, we're not a cab service. We're just Afro.
Sure. Sounds good.
Yes.
And as a plan.
It's good we settled that quite early in the show. So it's Afro, and it's something very, you know, we can identify with as African very easily. And you're in the business of moving things, people, whatever, just moving things, right? From location A to B, you know, that's your business today.
Absolutely.
Before we jump right in, I wanted to hear your story. Before Afro, what were you doing and how did you get, you know, to be the general manager for Afro Nigeria?
I have a kind of a checkered story. So I was born into school. And it all happened when I schooled in Nigeria all my life. So I stayed from University of Uyo in Uyo, and I had a degree in electronics engineering. I sort of spent some extra time in school, so a degree that should have taken me like 5 years actually did take like 8 or 8.5. A little bit around not being very completely focused in school. So maybe if I was probably in Harvard or in Stanford, I probably would have just dropped out and gone to start a company. But I lost a little bit of focus in school. There was no dropping out to start Microsoft or Google or something like that. You just like wake up one morning and like, guy, you better go finish school, like get your degree and go and do NYSC. So while you have all those distractions with getting very excited about IT, buying laptops for people, setting up cyber cafes, trying to build Cyber Cafe Timer, doing some really, I would say, lucrative stuff for a student, and then your academics kind of suffering a bit. At some point, you get to realize that, look, you need to go back to school and then get a degree, forget about the strikes. I mean, some other startup founders in Nigeria went on to start up job search engines during downtime or during strike. I just was doing a one-man business, and after a while, I had to go back to school and then finish up. But that was, I'm just highlighting on this because that was the time where the interest in IT took off. I originally thought I was going to go into network engineering, so I went the path of getting a Cisco certificate, and then it was about the time about the telecoms boom in Nigeria, 2002, 2003. So you either wanted to work in another company or you wanted to work for MTN or Econet or whatever their name was at the time. So that was like your dream entry-level job between 2002, 2004, 2005. But then I got interested in programming. First of all, trying to scratch my own itch. So when it was time to graduate, they couldn't find results. They couldn't compile my CPA. So the first thing I tried to do was help the school's department set up some sort of Excel form and some sort of forms over data application that allowed them collate results and help calculate people's CGPA. So that was kind of like my first foray into programming. And then I got involved with a few people. I had a mentor who was doing something with the online education, scratch card, university portal space. And then it sort of went into that. My first real job would have come sometime in 2007. I worked for a company called Dragnet. Dragnet is into computer-based testing. So they were providing screening tests for employment, and we're trying to be the JAMB or SAT of employment. So instead of coming out of school and taking Intercontinental Bank exam, Shell exam, Mobil exam, this other bank exam, First Bank exam, they try to create one exam that you would take and you would get a score, and then you would take that score to every company and say, I'm an 80% Dragnet score or GSE score, employ me. So they were trying to kind of unify testing. They've pivoted their business and they've gone on to become very relatively successful, but that's where it all started. Then after Dragnet, I worked in the online media space for a popular whistleblower website at the time called 234next.com. So I was on the web team building the web application, SMS news application, mobile applications for 234next.com. 234next.com, I spent the time at Paga, which was probably the most, and that was where I really learned a lot about programs, enterprise systems, and startups. Paga was a fantastic learning environment. I worked with some extremely cool people, Tayo Vyosu, Eric Obina. It was just amazing. And then Paga, they did everything from scratch. So they would set up their servers, they would co-locate them, they would move them from one data center to the other. They would build their whole mobile money platform from scratch. They were not licensing some foreign or established technology. They literally stitched everything together with open source tools. And I learned a lot then, and it was fantastic. I did leave Paga sometime in 2012, went back to Dragnet, took on a more senior role. And then I worked in a company called Audax, which was like an educational consulting company. I got in there and kind of like helped them reorganize their business, spent a little time working with children, learning to program. That was also a very nice time for me. It was the first time where I had a job where kind of like teaching was, and I think I enjoyed teaching. I come from a background of father teacher, mother teacher kind of thing. So it was the first time I got paid to teach technology. And I spent a lot of time teaching kids. And I think that kind of like also brought me a little bit more into the ecosystem. I got recognized as the guy who taught kids how to program, or the Audax guy and stuff like that. Went on to win a Google Rise Award for that in 2013, which was also very gratifying. When the management team of Afro, or AfroCab as they were then at that time, came calling, they were like, oh, we want to build a product. It's something that's established in other markets across Latin America, Europe, North America, and even Asia. So we want to build a flavor of that product for the Nigerian market. We'd like you to be part of it. And then once we get the product running, if you think you would like to come and be part of it full time, then we would probably offer you a position. So that was late 2013. And by April 2014, I had started working Afro at the time. Then I was in technology. We ran the business for about a year, from April 2014 to May April, May 2015. And we had all sorts of ups and downs as a startup, challenges in technology, understanding the market, funding and finance, staff coming and going, people exiting, people going on to get other jobs. So literally by May 2015, they offered me the position of general manager of Afro, and then I took it. And it's been 9-10 months of ups and downs as well.
Cool. I mean, that was a big rundown. I mean, you literally thought every, you know, vertical there is there. I mean, at least 50%, because they counted employment, education, media, fintech, and now transport and logistics.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. I should get some fantastic. Did they listen to this podcast in Silicon Valley? Someone listening was going to like call me afterwards. Like, this guy has a breadth of experience that we should be very interested in, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like all this experience packed into one man. Wow. You know, we should go out for a beer one of these days, right?
Yeah. It's been interesting. I think I've been lucky. Not, of course, when you jump ships like that and you're not working for some very big companies, you may not be financially very lucky, but I've touched a lot of sectors and it kind of gives me a very broad overview, a very big bird's eye. I tend to see the big picture when I get involved in anything from helping someone talk about the idea or design that product or actually try to implement it or even go try to sell it. Or pitch it. I think when I talk to a couple of people, I think I tend to see things differently and I tend to see a lot of things. Also in terms of core technology, it's taken me across a number of stacks, right?
You kind of like have to really, you know, play around with a lot of technology. So you do a lot of hello worlds in different languages, do a lot of walkthroughs and tutorials to wrap your head around, okay, how do they do this in this technology? How do they do this in this on this platform? Yeah. You need that to be able to coordinate a team, to be able to hire people, and when you're working with vendors, to really make sure that no one is just, you know, playing you or just twiddling their thumbs and getting paid. And then you also need to make sure people are not cutting corners. So I don't know how to do location-based services, but the best practice says, if you wanted to get the user's location, this is how we should go about it. And if I look at your code, I don't see you going that way. Like, so go figure. Like, you know, so I can tell you what's wrong. I may not be able to tell you what's right or how to do the right thing, but I'm able to see a lot of bugs, a lot of wrong approaches to standard solutions across board. Yeah.
Now, let's home in on what you do at Afro. What are your challenges, you know, to, you know, get Afro out there, you know, into people's hands, develop the mobile app, and, you know, to get people really using, you know, the solution on a day-to-day basis. What are the challenges, the big challenges you face?
Two challenges. Money, Uber. So if you're not worried that you don't have...
Just quickly.
What?
I just have something to mention. I was in Nigeria, so a month ago, and Uber, yes, is what everyone was talking about. And I'm curious as to how you overcome that sort of, because it's a massive competition and, you know, they've got a really good product. And the other person on the side is Easy Taxi. So I'm just wondering, because I never heard anyone mention AfroCab, and it's a bit sad because this is our homegrown product. So I just wonder how you're thinking about overcoming that challenge.
Okay, so this is a question that I can probably answer in my sleep because we have to rehearse it every day, and you get asked this question every day. This is probably the third or fourth time I'm going to have to give this sermon about Africa and Africa. So first of all, I always usually say I think the market is large enough, and the skies are large enough for birds and planes to fly without colliding. I also think that one company doesn't have to lose for the other company to gain. And then when we start talking a little bit about homegrown solutions and value proposition, when we assessed the market and when we looked at the local peculiarities of catching a taxi in Nigeria, we designed Afro with an approach that we felt was very Nigerian. The first one and the most evident one is we believe when you get into a cab in Nigeria, you have a say in how much you're going to pay, and you know upfront how much you're going to pay, and that's what you pay at the end of the ride. So in Lagos, for instance, there have been many iterations of metered cabs on taxi. I think even at the time, the metro taxis and also the red cabs had meters in them. It just didn't work. It wasn't because the cabs were not good. It's because there was an alternative and people were not ready to pay by the meter, right? That's the way they're wired over here.
Constant traffic.
So when there's constant traffic, so like, it's like, I want to go from VI to Aja. I know there is traffic, but I will pay you 1.5. Okay, you agree, Abi, you know, agree. You know, like, that is, even for the top 1%, even for the elites, right? While they use a foreign product, while they would use Halo, Uber, you know, I mean, Lyft. When it comes to Nigeria, they kind of like wear their Nigerian hat. It's like what they say about people breaking traffic rules in Nigeria. And then when they just go abroad, they just conform. So these were a few things we could do when we started. At that point, when we started, Uber wasn't yet in Nigeria. So we came out, we said we wanted a cash product. We wanted it to be able to negotiate the fare. So if you said you wanted to go from Ikoyi to the airport, we would suggest the fare based on distance and maybe time of the day, where we think traffic is, whether you're going to be in or against traffic. And then when we make a suggestion, you know, say it's 4,500 there. If you have no idea about the price, you could be an expatriate, you could be an out-of-towner. It could be a fair price. But if, like, you live in Ikeja and you work in Ikoyi and you've been doing this for the past 5, 10, 20, 40 years, and you know that it should be 3,000 naira, or you know that 3,000 naira is not a bad price, we actually allow you to set the price so you can tap suggested fare, adjust the estimate to 3,000 naira, and then send out the bid. So when the bid goes to the drivers in the immediate proximity, they see that Francis is at 1,004 estates who wants to go to Ikeja City Mall. He's only willing to pay 3,500 naira. So it's either you say yes or no. I mean, this is the classic situation where I have 1,500 naira in my pocket. I go on the streets and I meet this baba, whether it's a red cab or a yellow taxi, and I say, I want to go somewhere. And he says, how much? And I say, how much? He says, 2,000. I say, I got 1.5. He says, no. And then he walks away and I wait for the next guy. So I'm literally going through the first and the next guy till I find the guy who's going to go for that trip for 1,500 naira. Or I eventually do give up and see that by consensus, no one's going to go except my bid is up to 2,000 naira more. What Afro is trying to do is we're trying to eliminate that iterative, frustrating process by saying, specify your pickup location, where your destination, here's a suggestion of the price, you can adjust it, and then send out that bid. The first guy who's in close proximity to you, who's willing to take that trip, we're going to connect the two of you together. Right. So that's slightly different from the other model of, just say where you want to go and then somebody comes to pick you up. And at the end of the ride, we pull out what we feel is the cost of the trip. Right. And we've given you an idea of what our base fare is, what our time and distance factors to the fare are. So you don't really know upfront. You get an estimate pretty accurate many times, but for Afro, it is spot on and it's exactly what you say you're willing to pay. So you could be a bargain hunting. You could be just true to the amount of money that at the time, and put your hand and you get one that's comfortable for you. So I think that price control, knowing your fare upfront, the ability to negotiate a bit, are differentiating factors for Afro and value proposition for Afro. In addition, we've been cash based from the beginning. We do accept cards now, and we're also integrating mobile payments, but we've been very Nigerian from the get-go. And then on the driver's side, we take only 10% of the commission, and we take only 10% and always 10%. For some other businesses, they do take more than 10%, 15, 20. Sometimes they take nothing. There was a time EasyTax to run their business, I think, for a year plus, and they weren't taking any commissions from their on-demand rides. And then sometimes they give you some other charges like background checks, insurance, and other things that get worked into your bill. But ours is kind of like, we think transparency, honesty, and clarity of pricing is a selling point we have to focus on, and it's a message we're going to be putting out there. The question would be, if you have all this good stuff, why aren't you out there? Like you said, you came to Nigeria and didn't hear about us. So in all honesty, we've struggled with our product. You said it you know, point blank, these guys have a fantastic product, right? It's mature. It's 5 years old. As a company, they're worth billions of dollars, right? So it's difficult to compete with them, but it's not impossible. We're a local company, so we're small, we're nimble. We can probably move faster if we have the right technical capacity. We have the right, we can make decisions on the fly. Currently, and this is not something that was possible a year or 2 years ago when we approached Afro differently. Right now, we do stuff on Slack, BBM, WhatsApp. We make changes. People wake up at 2 a.m. and get on board and do something and publish it. In previous iterations of Afro, we weren't that flexible, we weren't that nimble. Right now, with our technology, everything being done locally, which we only started doing in August last year, everything is much faster. So we see some power in local, and we see some opportunities there as well. So I think those are kind of like what differentiates us from the competition. Our pricing, our value proposition, for the fact that though we're a small company, we're local, and that's it.
Cool stuff. So what's next? What are you guys doing right now?
So right now we are kind of like we're in a lucky position. So in August last year, we actually rethought our product entirely, brought development back to Yaba, not just Nigeria, the famous Yaba. And then we re-engineered the product and thought through it properly. In December, we were just like getting ready with an MVP. We're just saying we're back, right? And this is like our third incarnation. If anyone who knows about the history of Africa, this is like the third time we're coming out to say we're back. but it's the first time I would say I, as an employee of AfroCab, has had up to 50 to 70% confidence that we have a product that works. It's not the sexiest product. It's not the smoothest product. That is changing very fast. So at the end of this conversation, I might open my app and I see a different app that looks better or works better because we've dealt with the functionality. We've dealt with the core features and now we're adding all the bell and whistles. So there have been a lot of changes policy-wise in the monetary, fiscal, whatever policies of the government of Nigeria. At some point, they blocked cards. At some point, they blocked dumb accounts. At some point, the banks told us that you can't use your Naira MasterCard abroad to withdraw from ATMs. As it affected online transactions, they actually started blocking some cards from processing transactions. So for a company like Uber in Lagos, you see them introducing cash payments. Something that they've always had on Uber in other markets like Nairobi and India, but they were not really keen on doing so in Nigeria, or they were not, you know, very decisive about it. They had to bring cash payments in quickly. They've also had to do things like integrate with Paga. And this they have done because they're having problems with charging Nigerian cards using their payment provider. I guess that's Braintree, and there's some kind of disparity. You get charged 2,000 Naira, but at the end of the round trip of, you know, the money being converted to dollars and dollars being debited from your bank or being acquired from your bank and your bank debiting you, you find out that you might get charged 3,000 Naira. Maybe because we have parallel market rates. We have two Forex rates in the country. So that has ticked off customers a bit. Some of them have been disappointed with the service or dissatisfied with the service. And they have just like, okay, what other choices do we have? Right? And in saying what other choices do we have, this our newly engineered product that we started in August just became ready in the same December, January period, right?
Yeah.
So luckily for us, we do cards as well, but our payment provider at the time, Stripe, was actually charging the cards in Naira. So while there are some banks that are still blocking our card transactions right now, it's not because of a disparity of, say, 2,000 Naira to 3,000 Naira or 50% difference between what your right receipt tells you and what gets removed from your bank account. It's simply because they feel it's an offshore transaction or it's initiated offshore, it's in dollars and stuff like that. So there's some restrictions by some banks that are affecting us. But a local company, we're also very nimble. So we're quick on the game, talking to Simple Pay. I can unofficially say we've integrated Paystack as at today. So there's like, we can react very fast and we understand the local market. We even talking to needs and saying, maybe we don't even need cards. Maybe people can just literally link their bank accounts, right? Mm-hmm. And at least we would serve the Nigerian market and we're able to debit and because we're directly connected to NIB. So we're not asking for your bank account. We'll probably be asking for your BVN and something else, and which bank and which NUBA number you have. So I think for a local company that doesn't have this big legacy thing going on, also, I feel the frustration, and I'm not sure, this is purely guesswork. I feel the frustration that people like Uber and Easy Taxi may have for their Nigerian operations is, they're probably doing 5 million rides a day in San Francisco, in Beijing, in Singapore. So if you're doing 1,000 or 3,000 in Nigeria, if you send a request to the product team or to the dev team that they should make a tweak, a change, and they should add a new feature, they may want to do a cost benefit analysis of like, how many rides did you did yesterday?
You're rubbing it in right there, right?
Okay, hold on. But it's frustrating. Why I'm saying this is for us, we're doing 10 rides a day. If we wake up and say, oh boy, maybe we integrate PayStack, it's like quick on draw. There's no conversation. There's no cost benefit analysis of who's going to affect our Joburg operation. There is no Joburg. Like, we are Lagos. We are struggling in Lagos. And if we need to collect cash over SMS, or we need to carry POS terminals to our drivers, or we need to take the drivers to the nearest CM just to collect the money. We are that flexible. Like, if we need to even tell the person, can you do internet banking transfer from your GT? Here's our account number. Like, please pay for the ride now or upfront. I'm just trying to give you an example of what I'm saying.
It's
really not rubbish. It struggles.
Yeah, so it's the hustle, struggle. Right? Nice.
It's a hustle. Anything that brings money to the organization. Yeah.
Connections are big, but
Antonia says she's happy that you can do anything for your customers, right? So, Ekpemi says.
Yeah, I was going to say, those who are using the app, you've talked a lot about that, but what of the drivers who actually are the service providers here? Like, how do you bring people on board? What's the process like? Because I met a number of people in Nigeria who wanted to turn their second cars into taxis. So I just wondered, what is your vetting like? What does it take, Vinny?
And I would say this to be a bit of inexperience and myopia. We didn't really design our products initially for the fleets or for the people who own cars or people who aren't going to drive their cars, what people would call partners. So we really thought of drivers bringing their own cars. And then we would inspect the cars. We would get them to guarantee us to sign that they were credible alleged or credible people. We would do a bit of background check on them. That has changed, and I'll come to that right now. But I'll come to that very soon. Originally, we targeted the people who had the kind of cars we wanted that we would find outside the choice hotels, outside the airports, private, excellent condition cars, air conditioned, well maintained. And they kind of like work with associations. So if you went to somewhere like a cool hotel, you would find out that there are about 300 drivers under one cabal or one alaji, right? And he can guarantee that he knows everybody. Everybody knows their turn when to pick a passenger. And those are the kind of cars we wanted. So we approached them kind of like top down. We tried to solicit one or two of them to join. And then, so we were really bringing on professional drivers, taxi drivers, not necessarily colored or painted taxi drivers, but people who were riding car hire or chartered services for a living. And we try to bring them on board. So, and at the end of the registration process, we'll get some information about who you are, where you are, mm-hmm. and your phone number. And then we'll reach out to you to verify you and train you to make the platform. And then after you, welcome you on board the platform. But we've seen that, like you have said, a lot of people come on the platform and they want to use their car instead of the car just sitting down in the company parking lot from 6 a.m. in the morning. They want someone to drive their car while they're not there. Some people are doing it as a business. So I have 10 cars, I want 10 drivers, I want to know where they are all at the same time, and I want all of them to be making money and I'm paying them a salary. So this whole idea of having a partner or a fleet owner is something we had to iterate for. So if you own a car, we expect you to bring a driver, and we expect you to know your driver and sign up your driver, and we'll give both you and the driver some sort of monitoring to know what's going on, how much you're making, where the money's going to, how active your driver has been. today, this week, last week, year on year, month on month, day on day. But then we also have people who don't want to have the hustle of, they don't even want to go look for a driver. Like, I'm just a young girl who's been sent to Lagos. I have access to two cars. I can't go ask salary for a driver and chasing driver and managing driver. So for that, we defer to third parties. We don't endorse them. We just encourage you. Like, well, we know a third party company that brings drivers, does background checks on them, and they can help you manage your car and your driver. But they will take a percentage of the 90% we leave for you. So when people come with those kind of requests, we just pass them on to those people. And we're like, you're doing this at your own risk, but we can tell you that these partners or these agents, we do know them, so it's sort of a calculated risk.
I like the revenue split, 90%, 10% is not bad. So something that I think you should put out there for car owners. It's interesting.
I wasn't even actually thinking of the people who go to work and they have their cars packed. I was thinking of people who have spare cars, but that's an interesting aspect that I didn't see before.
So there are people who actually, I would say, like they would say those days, eat their own dog food. Like, the driver comes in and picks up the car at 5 a.m. and starts working and probably drops the car home at 10 p.m. And when the owner of that car wants to go to work at 7 a.m., she would bring out her phone and order an Afro and an Uber. And anyone that comes, she would get in and go to work. It doesn't even have to be her driver waiting for her or coming back at 7 a.m. to take Madame or take the owner to work. Like, the driver is in the pool, is in the network, and when she's ready to go anywhere, to work, to lunch, she just goes to that same network and orders the ride. Very interesting.
Okay, cool stuff. I think it's been interesting just learning about Afro technologies in general and what Afro Cabs brings to the market that is different from the other companies. It's always really good to know that plainly. And I hope that people who are listening would you know, take that on board and use the application. Another interesting bit out of Anidi, your history for me, and I always keep coming back to, is your experience in teaching kids how to code or learn stuff. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we would either benefit or suffer from what we do or we don't do. Because we're looking for people to join our companies in the future. These are the people should have been training. We did not. And then you have nobody. Yep. You have people who just drop in and drop out. So it's really interesting. And I really like that bit of your experience. And I hope you continue to do more of it as well.
We'll try. If we get support from the industry professionals like Francis, Antonia, even financial support, you know, support, adopt a child, adopt a school.
Interesting.
I'll send you the pitch documents.
I mean, I'll expect that, right? I'll hand it over to Ipim myself. Nice. Okay, so it's been nice talking with you, Anyedi. For people listening, Anyedi is Anyedi on Twitter, and you can check out AfroCab. It's AfroCab.com. They are more than a cab service. It's very clear there.
Yeah.
And it's good to see the entrepreneurial spirit that is really driving that. And it's been a pleasure talking with you. I think at least some of that energy has rubbed off, and I think people listening would also benefit from that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks for this opportunity, and I think that to keep the entrepreneurial spirit going, we've also had funders, financiers, and backers who, when everything looked like, you know what, we should just pack up shop and go, they've kind of like hung in there. So it's not just being able to be an entrepreneur or as a tech person to hang in there and continue coding on an empty stomach, but I think also for people who are either funding businesses or supporting startups or running startups out of bootstrapping startups, I think it makes a lot of sense to hang in there. I think I didn't mention this. Over the last 2 weeks, we've done more business than we've done over the last 2 years. So just imagine we quit at the beginning of January. Like, that would be crazy. And the 2 weeks we've done here has given us so much more hope and more energy that is even reflected in this conversation. So, I mean, you never know when the tide is turning in your favor, right? And if you quit, well, we do understand that sometimes you actually do have to quit, but hang in there as long as possible.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Anthony, I don't think we've ever had a close like that from any person we've interviewed.
So do I get a t-shirt?
It's a new year, new things.
Yeah, that's good. That
thanks a lot, cool. Guys.
Yeah, thank you, Lee.
Yeah.
So, listeners, you can catch Digital Drift on our website, digitaldrift.me, on SoundCloud, and if you are an iTunes user or iOS user, we're also on the iTunes store. So, yeah, so you can find us there too. Thanks. All right, bye.
All right, bye.
Bye, take care.